Good evening, This is your host, David Murphy, speaking for the National Black Unity News Podcast. Tonight we have several guests online with us. We have Brother Michael Thomas, Brother Bill Gooden, Vernon Streeter, and Mr. Umoja himself, and yours truly, David Murphy. And we will have a lot of interesting things to talk about. You know, what's going on in this country today is people don't know where tomorrow is going to be like. They don't know what type of situation this country is going to be in. We don't know, really, you know, we kind of left in the blind. But one thing we do know that's still going on, we still getting shot down in the streets. We still getting hung. We still being discriminated against. People can say anything out their mouth and expect to get away with it. And change starts with us. And speaking of that, here's a longtime brother who's been on the front line as well for a long time, Brother Satawi Jahi, who is the co-host of the broadcast. And I'm going to let you take it from here, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. Again, I'd like to say good evening, everybody, under the sound of my voice. And whether you're tuning in from wherever you're tuning in from, is we're glad to have you on this podcast for the night. Our prayers and hearts go out to brother down in Atlanta who was taken out by the police because he took this stun gun from them and ran, and they shot him in the back, and people went off. And, you know, people can read more about that person. But, you know, hey, it's the thing that's interesting is Dave Chappelle just came out with a thing called 846, which he did a thing about the whole George Floyd thing, and, you know, and talked about, you know, when is it going to end? And he talked about how it's so important that people take to the streets and that the streets will speak for what people are doing, because he was challenged by, well, Don Lemon challenged the celebrities. He said, y'all don't want to hear from no celebrities. He said, the streets are speaking. So let the streets speak. So I thought that was interesting on his part. But as we do each and every week when we come on these airways, we do a reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough. And so we're going to get into the reading for the day, and then I'm going to introduce our guest that we have, Mr. Michael Thomas out of Charlotte, North Carolina. So the reading for the day, June 15th. Be sure to take your vitamins. Quote, the mind is the standard of man, unquote. Paul Lawrence Dunbar, writer and poet. We're aware of the process by which the body obtains vitamins through food and water to maintain sound health. To eliminate a vitamin deficiency, you choose food for your diet that contains the necessary vitamins. Through nature's cycle miracles, the body absorbs vitamins and distributes nutrients to vital organs. Vitamin A, for example, protects skin and hair. The B complex develops stamina. Vitamin C wards off diseases. Vitamin D builds strong bones. And vitamin K enhances eyesight. These vitamins act within and on the body, keeping us healthy and fit and able to act. But have you heard of vitamin I? Vitamin I develops inspiration. To correct a vitamin I deficiency, you can purposely select beneficial external influences to help you achieve the motivation you are seeking. Vitamin I can be absorbed from numerous resources, a few of which, and Still I Rise by Maya Angelou, A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, Up From Slavery by Booker T. Washington, Succeeding Against the Odds by John Jackson, Live Your Dreams by Les Brown, Wing Power by Arthur G. Gaston, in the Bible, also with the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley. These are some powerful books that one can read and get some very inspiration vitamins from. Whereas natural vitamins must be taken on a regular basis for a fit body, vitamin I must be absorbed daily for a healthy and productive mind. Therefore, be sure to take your daily supply of vitamin I. And, you know, one of the things people can do is if every day you pick up a book and read 10 pages out of it, you know, which means within a month you've read 300 pages, which covers most books. Most books are not more than 300 pages long, so you can read a book a month by reading 10 pages a day and get plenty vitamin I inspiration. So feed your mind with nourishing thoughts, just as you feed your body with nourishing foods. And with that said, let me introduce our guest for tonight, Mr. Michael Thomas, who was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, native of Charlotte, North Carolina, born in 1953, of a male murdered offspring, murdered at 28 years of age. Yeah. Give you my condolences on that, brother. BA degree in political science and public administration from Winston State University, an Air Force veteran. Thank you for your service, sir. Former realtor. Worked with Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, NACA, stopping mortgage foreclosures. Worked with Harrington Morgan and Barksdale Incorporated, HMBI, managing the sales of HUD homes. Capital Council Executive for U.S. and Canadian Foreign Naturals. Capitalist Economist of 1,000 Great Minds, 1K GM Capital Incorporated. Director of Short Period Capital Producing Programs. Writer, creator, producer of Whole Wide More Homes Without Mortgages, National Housing Program. Program enables design persons in the country, all 3,142 counties, coast to coast, to get a house in a car, truck, van, or SUV, debt-free, no credit required, no one turned down. And we're going to get some information about their program tonight. But he's also a part of an organization called 1,000 Great Minds. And I know he's going to tell us a lot about their program and how people can participate and get involved in their program. They have a website, 1000greatminds.com. I advise everybody to go there. You know, after this broadcast, see how you can sign up. I signed up and, you know, participate in their program. So with that said, I turn this program over to Mr. Michael Thomas. Good evening, sir. How you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Tawi. Thank you very much. Thank you all for inviting me onto the show. I am grateful. I want to give you everyone a brief breakthrough of what I have been dealing with. Something the program that I produced called Howie Moore. Howie Moore is a nationwide housing program that enables every design person in the country, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, to get a house in addition to a good running car, truck, van, or SUV with no rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay, debt-free, no one turned down. So that's our unique selling proposition. That's our product. That's our service. That's our package. That's what we deliver. A house in a car, truck, van, or SUV with no rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay, debt-free. And what this does, it fills a void that has been historical. And I can start back in 1968 with the 1968 Fair Housing Act. We can see how unfair the Fair Housing Act is, because we still have homeless people. And it's senseless, because we are supposed to be the greatest country on the planet, and we don't have enough IQ. We don't have enough collective IQ. We don't have enough collective intellect to solve a minor problem like homelessness. And I'm going off my notes. Dogs have houses, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, central air, heat, and carpet, and they sleep in king and queen size beds. But we can't solve the problem of human beings not having houses. So Howie Moore is the solution to the nationwide housing problem. which enables every desiring person in the country to get a house and a car, truck, van, or SUV, no rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay. I want to back up to 1,000 Great Minds now, now that I've given you the unique selling proposition. Now I've given you what our product is, what our offering is, and I want to back up to 1,000 Great Minds. 1,000 Great Minds are currently being signing up as the central processing unit that will take process the input and output of managing the Howard Moore program, and it's necessary. We have to have a central processing unit, just like a computer has to have a central processing unit. If you took the central processing unit out of this computer, we would not be able to see. We would not be able to hear. The computer would not function because it cannot process the input and output, and that's what we lack in this country among black people, is a central processing unit. Now, 45 has his central processing unit. He has his 435 representatives, and he has his 100 senators, and he has his 9 Supreme Court justices, and himself making 545 people in the central processing unit of the United States. Black people don't have a central processing unit. We vote for people to come in and represent us, and that's not good enough. Historically, it hasn't been good enough. So 1,000 Great Minds comes in to be the central processing unit for the business activities of Black America. And without the central processing unit, we cannot take command. We have to take command. We must take command of what we are doing and bring forth a new model of reality, new systems of living that have never been seen or heard of before. And that's what Howard Moore is. It's a system, a model of living that no one has ever heard of before. And I'll conclude right here by admitting the ABCs of D. A, we always have to have an account with the infamous day. B, we are always the borrowers. C, borrowing leads to credit. C leads to D, credit leads to debt. And here is the whammy about the ABCs of D, the ABCs of debt. E, we have been programmed to believe that we are going to live an eternal life right here in the United States in debt. Howard Moore dismisses that. Howard Moore dismisses the idea that we're going to live in debt for eternal life. And people don't understand that. They pray, forgive us our debt, forgive us our debtors. Like, this is eternal life. It's not necessary. $1 trillion annually. 1,000 Great Minds plans to get 1% of $1 trillion one time among all black Americans. 1% of $1 trillion one time. $10 billion capitalization is just like corn seed. It yields a stalk of corn with 100 ears on each, 7 ears with 100 ears on each stalk, creating more ears. So wealth begets more wealth by creation design. You just do what needs to be done, and wealth begets more wealth by creation design. We have no need to be a borrower. We have no need for credit. We have no need for debt. We are too wealthy. And I'll close right there. Thank you.
Well, okay. Man, that's interesting. And also want to introduce our other co-host. I see he came on board, Mr. Andre Hector. How you doing tonight?
What's going on, sir? This is Andre Hector, radio personality, motivational speaker. Good evening, everybody, and I'm glad to be here. Hello, David Murphy and Satavi Jahi. And Mr. Bill Gooden, I seen you earlier on Facebook, what you were doing, so I will talk to you about that in a little while.
Yes, sir.
It's good to be here, David Murphy.
Okay. Before we jump on, Mr. Thomas, I cannot jump on you, sir, but before we start asking you know, some questions and things about your program, when I first met you, you shared with me about this 1,000 Great Minds. And of course, you know, so I'm always a student. I'm always willing to learn. And when you mentioned to me that you can get this house, a good operating car, and everything else you said attached to it, credit and things like that, and I asked you the same question, but I'm about to ask you now. How is that possible?
It is possible through the collective IQ, the group IQ of 1,000 great minds. I find that when I have a problem sometime, I can give that problem to one person that I come into, and instantaneously they can give me the solution to the problem that I had not even thought of. So imagine 1,000x, not 2x, but 1,000x, the power that comes from the collective IQ of the individuals inside and among 1,000 great minds. The idea that I don't know everything is not an idea, it's a reality, that I don't have a 1,000x capacity. And by having the collective IQ of 1,000 great minds from all work and business professions from A to Z, bringing all skill sets, know-how, intellectual capital, and business acumen to the table, we should be able to solve every problem that we come across with ease. So that's what it takes. We have to unify, and we have to take command, and we have to have a deliberate, intentional intent to do what we say we're going to do. And it's not necessary for 1,000 great minds to have the impetus of politics to change law, because we can write law, we can write legislation. No one talks like this. We can write our own legislation and put it on the president's and the Congress table and say, this is the legislation we want. We don't have to vote for anyone to bring legislation for us. We can write the legislation. That's the capacity and attitude of 1,000 great minds as it relates to solving the problems that we experience. The wealth problem, the political problem, the economic problem, the collective IQ of 1,000 great minds. And I add one more thing, which will tell you, give you the formula that I use on how a person can get a house and a car, truck, van, or SUV with no rent, mortgage, car payments that they pay. We have to retrain our minds, and that's what 1,000 great minds will do. It will retrain our minds. It may take a week, 2 weeks, three weeks, or a month. But when your mind is retrained, the value of your mind increases. The value of your personality increases to a point that the things that come out of your mind have the capacity to provide 9,091 homes, 9,091 cars to 9,091 people. That's the training we need. We have to get off of the horse and mule and get onto light speed, to where the value of the way we think is so great that we can house 9,091 people just off on the value of one great mind. And that's the way the concept works. The minimum value that will come out of your mind will be $2 billion. And there's a time limit on that, a 30-day time frame. 1,000 great minds has the capacity to capitalize $2 billion in a 30-day time frame. We can't wait 30 weeks. We can't wait 30 months. We can't wait 30 years. So we put a time frame on it. So that after 30 days, were we successful or were we not? How close to success did we get? How far away from success that we get? So we are not wasting time. We are operating at high speed. You come up with an idea, you put structure around it, and we bring it to market. And we capitalize $2 billion capitalization in 30 days. Now, if your mind is that great, and my mind is, and I know your mind is, with our collective IQ and training, you can do that. You can house 9,091 people on a $2 billion idea, $220,000 per person. That's what that means. 9,091 times 220,000 amounts to $2 billion. That's the way that works. 30-day time frame, we produce capital. That's why the name of the company is 1KGM Capital, because we produce capital. That's what we do.
Okay. Now, what does the process say? Some people may be listening to us right now, may be curious or interested in participating with us. What is the selection process for one to get involved?
You have to have a heart. You have to have a desire to solve problems, outside the box, problem solution oriented, mountain mover thinker, not a naysayer, not someone who is fearful, not someone who is refusing to learn, not someone who is egotistical and one pessimist takes down six optimists over just a few words. You have to be a positive individual, positive-minded person, and to understand that the value of your work will speak to you by the contacts and connections that you make, not only with your family, not only with your friends in your neighborhood and your community, but with countries. That's where 1,000 Great Minds is. It's not local. It's universal. And many people may fall off the wagon on what is 1,000 Great Minds. 1,000 Great Minds is universal. We intend to take charge and be the central processing unit for the world, because there are many problems, essential problems that we're experiencing for things that are essential to us that we are not getting, that 1,000 Great Minds can be the processor for. We can centrally process homelessness around the planet. And the key point about what I'm saying here is that we all become wealthy. And here's another key point. What is part of the wealth of the 1,000 Great Minds? We end up owning a nationwide bank operating in all 3,142 counties from the Atlantic to the Pacific, coast to coast. We end up owning a real estate company, all counties, land development construction company, insurance company, film production company, environmental engineering company, education, university, employment staffing company, plus all the other companies that we decide to buy, create, or develop. So these are the income flows that 1,000 Great Minds receive. Money from this bank. Have you ever invested in a bank before? Have you ever invested in a land development construction company before? Have you ever invested in a film production company before? Have you ever invested in a university before? Have you ever invested in an employment staffing company before? 8+ streams of income coming from 3,142 counties from Atlantic and Pacific coast to coast, 10 provinces in Canada, and 54 states in Mexico is where we plan to start out, covering three countries.
All right, fantastic. Anybody have any comments or questions for Mr. Thomas?
Well, Mr. Thomas, my name is Faole Umoja, and what you're talking about doing, I've already figured out how to do it. I don't, David.
You're a great man.
He has already said he wanted us to talk, and what you're talking about doing, including the banks, and although I would include more countries than you just said, I've already figured out how to do it. So, yes, I would love to sit down and talk with you, and we possibly can get that done. I have been working on it for a little better than 40 years. Over a little better than 40 years now. So since I'm, like I joke with David and say, I'm on the upside of the downside of the mountain now, and I'm past 70 years of age. So I think it's about time for us to get it done, and with your help and the help of a lot of others, I think we may be able to get that done.
Let me say this. Let me jump in here real quick. Mr. Thomas, I'm going to give you a little insight about this brother just was speaking to you. You and I met him about a year or two ago, and we met at this restaurant. Now, I'm a type of person, you know, like I said, you know, I started the National Black Unity News. I built a website, one of the largest websites in the entire country, the National Portal, and the National Black Action Portal. Now, that portal is 500 pages, and I had a personal database, which I'm not a typist. But my database was 262,000. Can you imagine how long it takes me to put this on the database to get to that number? But then I meet this gentleman, Umoja. He comes to the restaurant and he drops these stacks of papers up on the desk. I mean, like about 5 or 6 reams of paper. And he said one of them was he created his own alphabet. The other one Yeah, and, I mean, this brother had so much data that I say, man, and see, I understood who he was. I say most people would look at him like he's crazy or something, but I understood how much blood, sweat, and tears for him to do all of that work, because I've done things like that myself in the past without, like I say, compiled data together, putting together, you know, websites. And so it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of belief, and like you say, documentation, some of these conversations, as far as I'm concerned, be conversation any day. And so when a person not only, you know, talk the talk, but, you know, they got, like I say, they got documents and show how they're going to get from A to Z and everything like that. So that's what impressed me with the brother. And the same thing with you when I first met you. You know, I say, wow, you know, so you know, some people may not understand where you guys are coming from, but I can see it because my vision is extremely large as well, and it's global. And so, like I say, sometimes, you know, I say these things, sometimes I say my steps are ordered. You know, people come together for specific reasons, and I believe it's time. That's why I say you two gentlemen really need to sit down and talk. And I'm always in the midst, so, you know, so I'm always around. So, but I think if we could have a meeting of the mind, like you say, 1,000 great minds. But every time before you get to 1,000 great minds, sometimes it only takes 2 or 3 great minds. Then expand it on out. And so, but in any case, gentlemen, we're going to jump back on this a little bit later. But I want to bring up a new subject matter while I got my brother here. And we can all jump on this too, because it's all about the same thing. See, what we were just talking about is bringing people together. I'm talking about, it just don't have to be black people, but economics is a powerful tool. But I'm just having to be one of those type people that, you know, with the Moses syndrome, try to set my people free. But time is a hell of a thing, excuse my expression. What's going on today, right now, pandemic, then what you call this police thing. There's nothing new about, you know, these things. But it just so happens, it's happening so regular and so frequent now, they're actually going back to actually hanging people. And which they probably were doing all the time, just that now because of these cell phones being televised. And people's consciousness, you know, especially with Mr. George Scott, kind of not only penetrated a lot of black people's minds, but it also penetrated a lot of other minds as well. How man could treat another man, I don't care who, what color you are, that you can stoop so low with that much hatred in your heart. The audacity to do things like that, you know, and so, but you know, it's out there, it's real, it always has been, and I wrote an article in this upcoming issue based on that same thing. See, discrimination just is not a black and white thing. Because I tell people, you know, when I was a little teeny boy, you know, you can go back to ancient Africa, you can go back to China, when everybody was Chinese. This village fought the other village. They look just like each other, you know, so it don't have to be a race thing, you know, but like I say, people will fight against you. When I was a little boy, I lived in the 500 block of Baker Street. On the other side of the, you know, street, there was a 600 block. I lived in the 6, and there was a 5. Only one street separate called Pennsylvania Avenue. But yet, we used to play baseball against that block. But then we used to have what you call wars, but we actually fought them from time to time. And the only thing was that we all was poor. We all had patches in our pants. We all had just went to the same school, ate out the same store, and everything. Only thing separated us was that one little street. But sometimes they were like bitter enemy, just because, like I said, but we was all black. And so sometimes I say, when it comes down to, you know, the separatism and all this kind of stuff, it don't have to be a race thing. It just, man has already separated us. This high school against that high school, you know, us against them, regardless. But right now, the fact of the matter is, one of the biggest problems we have in this country has always been is this race thing right now. And it's very effective, and it's held us down for a long time. Now, I was so pleased today to see my partner, Mr. Bill Gooden, back out there, you know, on the protest line, and I should sit there and watch that thing almost for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I watched all the conversations that were taking place. They were talking to the sergeant, to the captain, and one little girl was trying to get inside the store and everything else. And one of the most amazing things that I saw there was these two young black women came up. And they protested, and they had no shame. One girl got out the car, just took her little tail, walked right up, through the line, tipped it on there, and got her crab. And of course, some of the people, approached them, and the vibe was for telling them not to do it, and this, that, and this, that. And from that point on, I'm just leaving right here. Bill, share a little bit of information what was taking place there today, especially with that incident.
Well, you're doing a good job. I mean, basically, listen, the thing is that the crab house has been around for a long time, from my understanding. But I think that what happened, man, is that he got a social media page, and I guess that with everything that's happening, somebody happened to look into his social media page and saying some of the remarks that he had been talking about black people for years. But the latest remark was something in terms of, y'all won't loot the welfare office and nothing like that, in terms of just making a remark that, he was trying to insinuate black people get welfare and Social Security. So of course black people took offense to that, so that's what the protest really started about, just some of the stuff that he had said on his social media page. But in terms of the incident that you're talking about today is that a week and a half ago, when people stopped protesting, it turned out maybe 300 started protesting and said the goal was to shut this place down for good. So today when we was out there, then you did have a couple black people, and this one specific incident, you had two black ladies that pulled up, and one black lady went in. They brought some crabs. So, basically it was conversation with the other girl sitting in the car, and she said that she ain't worried about what he calls us. She don't worry about that kind of stuff. She got a biracial child and blase, blase. But, but the bottom line, man, the point is this, is that at some point we have been unified in terms that people have to be able to feel our power. And when you're talking about the police and everything that's happening today, around the world, look, that's the good thing about a lot of white protesters being out in the streets. Trust me, if it was just black people out in the streets, man, let me tell you something. They would have got the army in the tank and just ran over us. But they're going to have to rethink how they're going to treat white people out there protesting in the street with all these black people. So, so the crime house, man, was just an effort for black people to say, listen, we ain't going to, if you're making 75% of your money from us and you're going to talk about us like that, then we're going to stop spending with you and we're going to stop other people from spending with you, which ultimately we're going to close you down. So that's the bottom line to that whole protest in terms of Vince Crab House. And based upon that, I feel that I need to go out there and be supportive because, when people are making them efforts, man, because listen, if we close down Vince, ain't just closing down Vince. You have all these other people take notice. Say, man, you see what happened to Vince? We better be careful how we treat them. So, you get respect, man, because you make people give you respect. A lot of our respect we hadn't gotten because we always played by everybody's rules that they put for us. And if we broke the rules, we became the criminals when the rules that they put before us was criminal rules in the first place.
You got some powerful points. And Brother Thomas and Brother Umoja, now you gentlemen talking about bringing real true power. Power only concedes the power, And like you said, you talking about a man that you say you don't want no, you write the legislation, and things like, 'cause that's what power can do, you demand.
Right.
But at the same time, I brought up them two young ladies for a reason. The reason is, even back when Harriet Tubman was running slaves, half of them Negroes, they didn't want to go. They want to stay. That was reminding me of what was happening today. Is because no matter what, she going to eat them crabs. She wants them crabs because that overproceeded her thoughts anyway, I believe. But the second thing is, they had no consciousness of it. She walked right past her. I'm watching it. And the other girl stood her ground, too. She got out the car, and people was coming at from different angles and stuff like this. Did you see what he did? What this, that? She didn't want to hear that. She she had already, like she had, her mind was made up. And so, gentlemen, that brings me to this question. Because I deal with the same thing, too. You know, I deal with Nationwide Black Newspaper. We're trying to get people to come on board, try to unite people. But there's a lot of Negroes out here that still want to keep us down, you know, down on the farm, as you say, or keep us in bondage and everything else. So, wait, just one more thing. Let me finish this point. So, gentlemen, with y'all type of programs and stuff like that, I know you got to leave some Negroes where they are. But like I say, even in protesting, they was out there today, they were saying, you know, they were telling people, come on down to support this. They said a week ago, there were 300-400-500 people out there. And today it was a handful, maybe a couple of dozen, 25-30 people. But at the same time, to keep momentum, like the 1,000 Great Minds and the program that you have, you know, you have to have a lot of momentum, and you got to kind of sometimes gather up like-minded people together, which is always not so easy at times. So based on our current situation, anybody can jump in on it. Based on our current situation in the state of the mind of the black man, I love what you said, sir, Mr. Tom, 1,000 Great Minds. You got anybody mind, but you say 1,000 Great Minds that you got to have a proof, and it had to be a pecking order, I guess. Can you speak a little bit more on that, Mr. Thomas, on that?
Yes, sir. 1,000 Great Minds is the right description. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear?
Yes, sir.
Yes, 1,000 Great Minds. To me, it's an economic approach. It's setting up an economic foundation that has never been set up before in such a way that regardless of the slaves who desire to stay and the slaves who want to come aboard, we are setting up a new country. You know, in other words, I don't say that, but that could very well be the outcome of it, because we are siblings. And if some of our siblings are insane and they want to remain slaves, well, they have a right to be insane and remain slaves. But the siblings who are not insane, who want freedom, will join onto us in the alliance to create the economic foundation that we need to create autonomy and independence, to create our own Declaration of Independence and our own Emancipation Proclamation, to the extent that we run the country like that. And there are many countries who populations are no more than the population of North Carolina, and it's a country. So like that, we can do the same thing. I don't talk much about going into that, but we can do the same thing. But my point is that an economic foundation is what we need first. Without the economic foundation, we have 1,000 or 10,000 or a million imperial choices, and we can't make sense out of it. We are not don't have a central processing unit to make sense out of everything that everyone's coming up with. So what we have to do is make priority. What's the priority need in this situation? I think that we need housing and personal transportation with no rent, mortgage, card payments, or debt to pay. What that does is your income does not go to rent. It does not go to mortgage. It does not go to car payment. It does not go to the infamous bank, because they are the ones who are the lenders and the creditors and the people who entrap people in debt. So the concept of 1,000 Great Minds, Howard Moore, is the absolute opposite of that. We take on the wealth consciousness, the wealth characteristic, the unification of our collective wealth to become autonomous and independent, to deliberately determine what the law is going to be for us. Now, as it relates to these murders going on, I'll tell you, what we need is a 24-hour death judgment. They don't talk about that. They talk about the death penalty. The death penalty, you live for 10, 20, 30, 40 years in penitentiary, but the 24-hour death judgment says that after the verdict is reached, after the judgment is reached, and the person is adjudged or the verdict is reached that the person did murder someone, that you step right out of the courtroom and go right into the gas chamber or the electric chair, you can go where you want to go. But you must be put to death before you go, because you murdered someone, and that there is no immunity in murder. You can be a police officer, you can be a soldier, you can be any gunner. But if you murder someone, the 24-hour death judgment comes upon you. And this is not a state choice. It is a choice of the family of the decedent, the person who was murdered. If the family of the decedent desires that the murderer, upon being convicted of murder, if the family decides that they want the person put to death, it's the family's judgment, not the judge's judgment or the jury's judgment. It's the family's judgment who lost the decedent. That's the way that works. And so the person with that law won't murder anybody else because he is put to death. Now, he has a right to go where he wants to go, but he must be put to death before he goes. That's a solution in my mind to that problem, and that would be the legislation that I would write, the 24-hour death judgment. It's not on the judge. It's not on the jury. Neither one of them lost the decedent. The family lost the decedent. So the family says, Your Honor, we want him put to death. So he must be put to death within 24 hours, likely like the decedent died. The brother under the knee, George Floyd, died in 7-8 minutes, okay? So the person in the electric chair or the gas chamber may die in 1 minute. That's an injustice, so 8 minutes, 7 minutes injustice, you know, because he died in less time than what George Floyd did. But nonetheless, he was put to death.
Okay. I second that emotion. I second that. I second that, Thomas. Well, I always had a sense of another kind of judgment.
Thank you, thank you.
It's called, I think they call it a defamation league. You know, I'm talking about in a country that we have here where, you know, it's unjust. People have been getting away with murder. And especially those who are supposed to be protecting us. And then the court system, because they can get one juror and say, well, I don't think he did it. They off and running again to do it again. But if there was another thing we used to call street justice, and we had street justice, and we knew that a judge, first of all, let him go, or we know this man killed somebody. And how these young people say that he get got by the streets, in other words. And I think that message will go loud and clear to those who want to say, thinking about hurting somebody, because you ain't going to get away. And the second thing is, those judges and anything else who are thinking about constantly putting us in jail, just for, so people get made, get paid and stuff like that, they get got as well. You know, and I think that'll clear up a lot. That's just my perspective, anyway. Look, what you were talking about earlier about the people and the crabs and everything. Look, them people act like that because of indoctrination. That's the only thing they know. That's why them girls possibly walk through that crowd. They don't know no better. Our people have been taught stupidity, intellectual ignorance for so long, for so very, very long. Then we all know about the Willie Lynch letter, and our people have been bred on that thing. You know, Willie Lynch said they will learn that letter and reiterate that thing for the next 300 years. It's been 308 years since Willie Lynch letter been out, and they relive that thing every day. Just like I heard them talk about, the white people talk about the welfare. Whenever you hear anything about the welfare system, they always put black people ahead of it. And the white people, the welfare system was made for white people. And there are 10 times more white people on the welfare. It's really more than 10, but I'm just rounding it off. It's 10 times more white people on welfare than black people. And they always say white people. I mean, black people.
They like to victimize the victims, you know. So
I don't care how you look at it. You know, they twisted it, you know, put their little spin on it. But in any case, gentlemen, you know, this is the time of the Mr. Hector. You got any comments, sir?
It's something that the gentleman, Mr. Michael, right, was saying before about that. Correct me if I'm wrong. He was talking about different laws for, was it for black, towards black people? Like black on black crime? I just want to make sure I'm on the right page.
Everything. Murder.
Well, I was trying to find...
Murder. You know, anyone who...
Go ahead, continue on, because I was trying to understand what you were saying with that.
No, if I understood...
Yes, I was just saying that because these things are happening, we don't have a standing law in place. We don't have a standing law in place that really gives us protection. We leave the law up to a judge to make a decision to whether you're going to let someone go or charge them. And most times he let them go in favor of them, the infamous they. And we're talking about a standing law, not a state law, the way the state handled North Carolina, handled as opposed to Nebraska or New York and that kind of thing, but a standing law across the nation about murder that it's just like housing discrimination or any of these other things that it encompasses everyone, regardless of what state it's in. It's the same. It's a level playing field in every state. It doesn't allow the judges to play with people and play with people's lives. The laws that we live by now are designed to wreck families.
Right. The law should not be arbitrary.
And about the point about the slaves, about the point about the house slaves, you have a choice. You're going to either get on the ship or you're going to stay off the ship, and the ship's going to pull off. And so you're in the house, mm-hmm. and you don't want to get on the ship. You're just behind, in my opinion.
Okay. Robert
Sotava, you still with us?
That was the question about the house Negroes. And,
I'm just listening and taking it all in.
Yes, I am. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. Yeah, yeah, we hear you.
Can you hear me?
It's a choice. You either do or you don't. And that's it. That's the best we can do.
Well, I was talking to a friend earlier today. Good friend of mine. He's from New York.
Join us and you stay where you are.
Yeah, so we, you know, me and my friend was having a good conversation, and he came up with some really interesting things to hold black people accountable towards each other. And I was just like, whoa, okay. So what do you think? And he was telling me black on black crime bill. And what you were saying, you know, was kind of like reminded me of what me and my buddy was talking about. We know that crime is a serious problem here in Baltimore. And we know that in spite of COVID-19, the killing has not stopped. But we know we're dealing with so many things, right? And somebody, we had a conversation. I don't know if everybody's thinking about this or thinking the same thing, but it's time for us to hold each other accountable on top of some other things that we can do. I was talked about we need to create another Black Wall Street. It was just so good, rich information that I was being introduced today and a couple days ago. But one of the biggest things, right, I think is holding each other accountable. And somebody came up with this proposal, and they're trying to get people to sign it. I don't know if anybody else heard about it, but I'm gonna run some of this stuff off if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All right, so he says in the black bill, the black on black crime bill, he says if somebody 40 years imprisonment for, that's the maximum felony. Number two, 10 years imprisonment, mandatory felony. Number three, $20,000 fine felony. 8 years supervised parole and a $50,000 restitution. Register as a black person killing and you must check in every state. If not, 8 years back in prison. We will get the signatures they need it. So they're coming up with this. They want to make each other accountable. And, you know, I for one, I personally think that's a good idea. I think that we need to really understand that black on black crime is serious, and that we need to work together more than anything before, because now we're dealing with a serious situation. It is, boy, 2020 is Ain't no joke. 2020 is no joke.
Brother Hector, let me ask you this question. You know,
okay.
You know, I hear about, you know, crime and everything, but you know what I think is the biggest crime of all?
What's that?
It's how we got in this, how we got in this situation.
How did
you
we
know,
get in this situation?
No, I said how that the way we are in this situation. What I mean by
yeah.
that is because systematic slavery, systematic all these laws and stuff that keep us in a certain condition. From the
correct.
School system to the jail system, and our community being flooded with drugs, which we don't create them; they were brought into the communities. And then you take the man and the woman, and I remember way back in the day, a man couldn't even live in the house if a woman was receiving some assistance, and so it separated
right.
the families. And even to this day, they would hire a black woman instead of, you know, most likely giving a man a good job, you know. And so it's a lot of, like you said, and Jamal hit the Willie Lynch thing. And so they got
right.
us fighting amongst each other, and then we victimized each other. And then, you know, because little Johnny or little Susie, whatever, if their mother was on drugs, and then they end up prostituting or do some crazy stuff too, it's like because they were victims themselves. And,
correct.
And we keep victimizing the victim. And sometimes I understand that, you know, you have to be harsh on certain things, but sometimes the condition that was created, because like I say, somebody right here in Baltimore, I think it was on the news or something, and they say since we had this pandemic, the rats in the downtown area wasn't getting their daily dose of going into the dumpster, you know, getting their food and stuff. I mean, so this is serious. Then all
oh,
of
wow.
a sudden they say all of a sudden these rats start being aggressive. Because they were going to the survival mode. And so they saw another rat below, so he's going to try to take it from them. So they're all just going there and getting their own stuff. And that's the same thing. Well, I'm using this as a bad analogy, but this was just on the news.
Yeah, go ahead. Understood. Yeah.
But when we've been under slavery for 400 years, Jim Crow laws and all this kind of stuff, man, all these things, that segregation, everything that happened to us, so they got us just like these rats out here. We in a hole. And we do anything necessary.
Let me tell y'all something.
Go ahead, help yourself, sir.
This black on black shit. Excuse my expression. It's a bunch of shit.
Hey, come on, listen. This gonna be on public. This gonna be a public thing. So come on now.
Be nice.
I'm really
you're
mad. I deal with statistics. They constantly tell you and pump you with this black on black thing. Statistically, 73% of all violent crimes committed in the United States every day. 73% of all violent crimes committed in the United States every day are committed by white people. 73%. But they don't tell you because they're too busy telling you about black on black crime.
Propaganda.
79% of all crimes committed in the United States, 79% of all crimes committed in the United States are committed by white people. This is the statistics from the FBI. But see, the thing is, they're so busy telling you about black this, black that, they take the eye off of them.
Well, you know what? Hold on for a second. I understand where you're coming from. And I hear you clearly. But however, this should be a wake-up call for all black people.
Let me say this. White neighborhoods have white-on-white crime. Hispanic neighborhoods have Hispanic-on-Hispanic crime. But they don't talk about it. We do not have black people in Asian neighborhoods committing crimes. But there are crimes there. The only crimes you ever hear about is black-on-black crime, but you have crimes in all of these neighborhoods. Why don't they talk about the crimes in all of these neighborhoods when they have crimes in all the neighborhoods? Why is there only black-on-black crimes?
We all know the answer to that. I mean, it's obviously a racial situation, regardless if it was a racial situation or not. I don't care how many people or statistics of white or black. The fact is we're killing each other as a black people. and it should wake us up. And we should come to the realization that it's time to work as a culture.
Look, I was in prison. And when I was in prison, we had the with Denver News on television. We used to get the Denver television station, Denver cable. And they always talked about all of this crime in Denver by black people. What 90% of Denver, Colorado, is white. But they only had black people and Hispanic people on the news. There was, it was like no white people was in Denver. They only, the news only let you know what they want you to know. So they put this thing on television. They put this thing on the news. So that is what we're talking about. But these people, excuse my expression when I first started because I was really beat up. They're lying. And so we talk about it, and we are constantly talking about it, and we are talking about their lies. It's not as bad as it really seems. Okay, 300 people got killed in Baltimore. It's a lot of people, and it's too daggone many. But if you would count all of the other people, it'd be a heck of a lot. And they're killing more of them people, and they're really vicious people. Yeah, but what about the, like I said, what about, you know, like I
said. Let me say this.
Okay, wait.
What is that you say, Brother
Baker? No, I was going to say, you know, there's a lot of things. There was a brother that came to one of our breakfasts one time. You know, so many types of crime, like you say, that never get reported. And he worked, somebody got a lot of background noise. And he works at Shock Trauma. And he told me this heartbroken story about when them brothers come in there all shot up and stuff like that. They don't get the same type of care as if a little Johnny come in there and shot up and stuff like that. He said more discrimination goes right in that operating room than we ever would see. He said it breaks his heart, the stuff, the disparity that takes place. Different. I'm just using that as one example. But these people supposed to be committed to saving your life. I don't give a damn what color you are. But yet, a lot of these brothers die on them tables because they didn't get the proper care. And we already know about, even in the health system, how black men disparage in the jail systems. There's all kinds of stuff that, you know, is you know, just not. That's why I say systematically, we've been put in the situation. But systematically, that's why I want to have this conversation tonight, because it's going to take us, by us, to get out this situation. We have, like you said, we do have great minds. We have great thinkers. And if we really put our resources together.
David Murphy, you're probably going to have to mute everybody.
Yeah.
Muted.
Yeah, unmute yourself when you want to talk, but we're going to close in a few, man. But all I'm saying is this, gentlemen, we know there's a lot of issues. Yeah, you know, we always going to be faced with issues, especially in our own communities and larger communities. And we also know, like Brother Mojo was just saying, that I'm going to give just one prime example of how the media portrays us. Every black person in the last 100 years, I don't care if it was a Michael Jordan, a Michael Jackson, or Oprah Winfrey, Bob Johnson, I don't care what you got, and they all have been slandered through the media one way or another. Now, can you imagine your little old white lady sitting in your little secluded area? And the first thing would come to mind, she said every time she pick up one of us in there, she said, I don't care how much money you get those Negroes, how well they can sing, how well they can dance, how well they can play ball. Ain't none of them no good. That's how they do it. You see, they can make you, they break you. That's why it's so important to have our own, you know, and that's why I say it's important to have our own media. That's why it's so important to have our own economic base. That's why even extremely important to have our own justice system. You know, but in any case, go ahead, Brandon, you unmute yourself if you want to say something.
I heard something that was kind of unique, and I heard it for the first time, and it addresses what we see on the news. from what I understand and what this person was saying was that they're conditioning the white people too. They're conditioning both of us at the same time. And they're playing both sides of the fence. So when they show all of these black people, they're trying to condition the white people not to trust us. Because these people are the only ones that's committing the crime. And this was coming from a white person. Now, I got the footage of it, but I'm trying to put all these different things together so I can, you know, once we get the news channel up, we have, like, a lot of footage. But that's what this white woman said. She was saying they conditioning us, too, because I think she came out of the country, and she said a lot of times when the white people growing up, that's part of their conditioning the white people not to trust us, like you were saying about the white lady. You know, and they grew up from a little child, you know, saying, oh, the black people are the only ones that commit all these crimes because they're showing it on the news.
Yep. And guess what? Just like I said, if a little black boy got there and do something crazy or rob somebody or this, that, you know, he's a thug, he this, that. Little Johnny go out there and do the same thing. Oh, he needs some mental health. You know, he just letting off some steam. You know, that kind of foolishness. But you know, that's what it is. It is what it is. And so, gentlemen, y'all can, I'm unmute you guys. But in closing, I want Umoja, you still with me?
Unmuted.
Umoja, can you still hear me?
I'm here.
Well, and Cole, we got 3 minutes left, so just you know, close and just share a few thoughts on who you are. If you want to leave your number, go ahead and do so.
Yes, sir, Mr. Thomas. My phone number is 443-994-5609. Please give me a call. Please, we need to talk. Because what you were saying about what you want to do, I've been working on that for 40 years, and believe me, I can make it come true.
All right. Mr. Thomas, we appreciate you coming on air with us again. Nice seeing you again, sir. And you got any closing remarks, sir? Let me see if I got you here.
You might have to unmute him, David.
Yeah, I can't do it from here. So I think he unmuted himself. So if you come back in,
I'm unmuted now.
Okay, good. There you go. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Give me your phone number.
In making progress about what black people are doing, we must limit our conversations. And some things should be acceptable in the conversation, and some things should not be acceptable. I think by limiting the conversation, we won't be going like scatterbrained in all these different areas and things. When you're talking about the hospital and how they serve people, Malcolm would tell you, well, why are you relying on the enemy in the first place? So that wipes that concept out. You're still relying on the enemy because you're talking about letting them operate on our people. So we have to erase that, and we have to limit our conversation. It can't be any politics involved. It can't be any other stuff involved. We got to take flight with what is going to get us into flight to get us to the next level, and that is economics. We can talk about all this stuff, but until we actually deliberately and intentionally take command and to delineate what our agenda is, and we effectuate our own agenda, we are just chattering and it's just babble that we are talking because we have not made a deliberate, intentional intent and action and written action to clear up the problem that we have. The nation is broke. It ain't fixed, and we got to fix it. And to continue to carry on conversations where we're just talking and we have not selected a plan is just babble, you know, in my opinion, because we have, and the unification of the collective IQ of the central processing unit that's going to take place, we haven't established that. The Congress of the United States, the president got his 435 in the House and his 100 senators and his 9 Supreme Court justices, these 545 people running the country. 1,000 great minds has to be the central processing unit for what we're talking about, in my opinion. And with us divided, united we see, divided we blind. United we see, divided, you know, we fall. And that's all it is, too. We're not unified. We don't have a unified entity. We don't have a unified activity. The NAACP hadn't been successful. And no, Black Lives Matter hadn't been successful. They're still bringing up black lives being killed. And so until we have someone who has a deliberate, intentional plan to say that we're going to stabilize everyone in the first place and we're going to take them out of economic slavery, we're going to continue to talk about history and about the Willie Lynch and about the philosophies and things, you know, that we are exposed to that are external to our individuality. We have to become internal and look inside and get the problem from inside without even an appearance of the outside. With the darkness, we have to look inside in darkness and bring the light out. We have to bring out the light. Here's what the light is right now. And we are conducting the light. We don't have a conductor. We don't have a central processing unit. We don't have 1,000 great minds. And that's my point. You know, we're just babbling.
Okay. Can you leave your number?
Speaking of light, we got a lot of people making some comments. I'm not going to read all the comments on Facebook. However, there's one particular comment that had stood out with me from Elise Jones from Virginia. She goes to say that somebody has to take the initiative to stand up and be the ones to make a firm decision to break the cycle of what's been the norm. For us, we have to make the rise above what they particularly portray of us to be, and be the community that we want them to see. Thank you, Alicia Jones from down Virginia. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Thomas, can you leave your number so people get in contact with you?
Yes, sir. 704-777-8899,
704-777-8899, 1000greatminds.com.
All right,
Mr. Bill Gooden, any departing words, sir?
No, I just want to say, you know, I was just more so listening than talking, man, because I guess the one thing I agree with Mr. Thomas on is that, you know, in an hour, it was too much trying to be processed in terms of new concepts and trying to weigh out people's concepts and had as much discussion. So I was just basically trying to listen, man, because it was just too much of me, to be honest with myself.
Mr. Satabi Jahi.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I agree with Bill. It was a lot to process, so that's why I basically was listening. And I would just say, if we keep in mind, you know, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, he was able to organize over 6 million people under the banner of one God, one aim, one destiny. And, you know, again, I said that's something that we really need to be looking at, and how to get out of our own particularisms. And if we can focus on that concept and operationalize it, you know, then I think we can go very far. So, and I think that, you know, we need to do is have Mr. Thomas and Brother Moja back on again and do maybe like a part two to this dialogue and conversation, and just sort of sort out some of the information and be able to stick to, you know, one or two particular themes, and that the dialogue center around that.
Okay, let me say this. You know, I kind of do things on purpose sometimes. And I'm going to tell you why. Because, like I said, everything is open is open right now. You know, I'm talking about the airways are open, everything is open. And based on my individual knowledge about a couple of brothers that's on this call right now, something needs to be said not openly. And you can't somehow always let your left hand know what your right hand doing, but we all know one thing, that we need to do something, and we need to have some private conversations how we can move this thing on. And like I said, I don't want to keep repeating the history and be going back and then get knocked out and get killed before it gets started. And so with that being said, Brother Vernon, anything in departing, sir?
No, I'm just taking everything in.
Okay, Brother Hector, closing.
Well, in closing, I really want to say this, and I say it a lot. I want people to understand that this is not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. However, what can happen overnight is a mind to want to change what's going on. And it starts first with a thought. The same old, obviously, is not going to do, because we see the same old results at the end of the day. It's time for a change, and it starts with us. It starts with us, and it starts reuniting with people who want the same thing, sitting down at the table and see what we're going to do. You could talk all day long. You could protest all day long. All you're doing is showing people that, you know, we have a problem. But in order to actually take your chain, take what you have a problem with, actually put it to action, you got to do something. You can't sit around. You got to get up and want to do something. The Bible says, as iron sharpens iron, so does a friend sharpen a friend. It's about sharpening one another, so you can sharpen us in return. We got to start making some things happen. A lot of things were coming to me, and people were talking to me about some things that they would like to do. But you, like you said, David, some things ain't meant to be said over the air. So I'll definitely share my thoughts with you. But this is Andre Hector, radio personality, motivational speaker. Guys, check my website, www.onrihector.com. Check my website for upcoming events. Everybody, God bless.
All right, okay. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to say thank you and good night to everybody. Hey, and y'all, right, man. We got to have a plan, y'all. We got to. All right.
The recording has started.
Thanks, Dave.
Good night.
All right, Mr. Thomas, I'll be in touch with you, sir. Your Mojo, I'll be in touch with you as well, okay?
Okay.
All right, gentlemen, y'all have a good evening. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, again. Thank you, sir.
Goodbye.
Okay, we're going to close out with the theme song of Movements Unlimited, which is called It's My Time. We just finished with the podcast, and this is my way of closing it out.
Okay. Is she coming back?